This is BDO in the Boardroom, a podcast by the BDO Center for Corporate Governance for the Board of Directors and those charged with governance. We're joined by your board peers and inspiring leaders to discuss the trending and timeless issues that are impacting today's boardroom agendas. Let's get started.
Hello, I'm Amy Rojic, founder and director of BDO Center for Corporate Governance and the host for BDO in the Boardroom. I'm pleased to welcome Dr. Cynthia Clark back to our program to discuss benefits of today's board directors and understanding various governance structures and how that knowledge can empower more informed strategic decisions that help optimize organizational performance while further enhancing an individual's director's own board service and career growth capabilities. But before we begin, a little about my guest. Cynthia is a professor of management and founding director of the Janine Institute for Corporate Governance at Bentley University. She holds a PhD and is a corporate governance and business ethics expert. She regularly conducts research and provides training on ethical decision-making, shareholder activism, and optimal nominating and governance procedures to senior management teams and boards. She is cited on governance issues in the likes of the Wall Street Journal, the Boston Globe, Forbes, CNN, Reuters, and Bloomberg Radio, among other media outlets. And she's an active member and speaker within several governance organizations, such as the National Association of Corporate Directors, 2020 Women on Boards, and the Society for Governance Professionals. She is also an author of Business and Society, Ethical, Legal, and Digital Environments, as well as Giving Voice to Values in the Boardroom, which we discussed in a prior BDO in the Boardroom episode. Cynthia, welcome to our program today.
Hi, Amy. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm going to dive right in here because I think we have a lot to discuss. So I'm going to break this down into about four buckets. So the first, I want to talk about the value proposition of governance structures. So from your research and experience, what is the value proposition for executives and board directors in developing a comprehensive understanding of the breadth and depth of various corporate governance structures? And how does this knowledge translate into tangible benefits for organizations as well as their leadership?
Well, there's a lot to tackle here. As you said, the governance landscape is changing very much. And so let's start from there. There are multiple facets to that statement. For example, most companies in the US, the UK, and the EU are now privately held. 81% of US companies with over 100 million in revenue are privately held. The percentage is even higher in the EU and even higher in the UK. There are nearly 25 times the number of actively held private companies than there are public companies. And so we're in a real different type of environment. Most of the conversation in governance focuses on the publicly held company structure, not the different aspects of private companies. And that's one thing I think we want to talk about today and flesh out. At the same time, we have been seeing a lack of trust in business. I'm part of a research team at Bentley, which partners with the Gallup organization to run a business and society report every year. This year, just 43% trust business a lot or somewhat. However, they talk about family-led firms that are very trusted. So we're basically looking at the public sphere versus either the family-held structure or the private company structure. They are very trusted to do, quote unquote, what's right. That was the phrasing of the question. So I think it's important to have companies not only understand, well, companies and board members understand both various corporate structures, right? Partnership, LLC, S Corp, C Corp, but also other key governance decisions. And that would be, you know, the legal structure, the ownership structure, the governance structure, for example. I put that out there as really home base in terms of where we ought to start with this conversation. But let me add something else that I think is part of this complex landscape. There's been a real expansion of the private capital ecosystem under the current administration, but it has certainly been happening over the last decade, including the private credit sector, which has reshaped financing choices for mid-sized companies, right? So the other thing we tend to focus on is large cap companies, not mid or small. But with a broader set of options, company owners and decision makers can strategically access capital in a variety of ways to best suit their needs. This in turn creates a need for boards to better understand and ideally lead the discussions on options for management.
I fully agree with you there, Cynthia. And I think especially as we look at the public company sphere and the changes in, you know, even the regulators and how they're approaching trying to expand access to capital markets, it'll be a very interesting next few years, shall we say, to see how that may change. But fully agree with you. So let me ask you, in terms of how can a deep understanding of these different governance structures and models that you mentioned inform current board members in their role? And what advice would you give to those seeking to expand their board service, whether by identifying the right opportunities or by evaluating the governance culture of prospective organizations?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because board members really are pressed to add value to management and to their peer board members, right? So when they know about various financing options and corporate structures, they themselves can prove their knowledge, but also be helpful in the day-to-day operations of the company and the oversight responsibilities of the board. So that's going to elevate the information culture that the board is in, right? It's much more active, much more leaning in than it has historically been. And so when you bring this knowledge to bear, I think you're just really, really adding to your board service and also at the same time helping your own career growth. And let me say that, you know, in the first part of this conversation, you were talking about some of these changes, but here it's important to add, there's also been other external factors that are driving an increase in the caliber of the board service. And you mentioned at the outset that I wrote a book called Business in Society. And I think that's important because what we're seeing now is an increase in the demands on boards and management to address stakeholder pressures for a wider corporate purpose alongside the intensified pressure from the firm's investors to maximize shareholder wealth. So we have these external pressures, right? Sometimes, you know, soft regulation, hard regulation, but they've led to a greater shareholder engagement and expanded corporate disclosure framework, the rise of activist investors and growing prevalence of shareholder proposals, and the increasing growth and concentration in institutional investor stock ownership. Not to mention the influence of proxy advisors. So those things, you know, have elevated the requirements and the scope of the board job, if you will, right? So that's important to consider. The second thing that relates to this kind of career growth, right, is most of the board seats that need to be filled today are from small and mid-cap companies. I mentioned that's kind of a dearth in the research so far, right? So just in 2024, 20 million business owners filed new business applications, according to Diligent. So we really have a changed landscape, right? So if I take that into consideration and I think, well, how am I going to get to know what the requirements are for or the pressures are for private companies and small cap companies and mid cap companies, right? I need to think about not so much having specialized knowledge as was sought after for decades, right? But more of a generalist approach. If I take all of what I just said together, there's now a preference for generalists who can effectively manage this wide range of governance responsibilities I've just laid out.
Yeah, and I think that becomes a really important aspect when you're thinking about kind of size, maturity, size of companies, I should say, maturity of companies, size of the boards in general. obviously, if you have a small board, you don't really have the opportunity per se to have so many specialists on the board. So you do seek board members that have more of a breadth of general understanding, but the ability to really ask questions where needed. But most importantly is to stay current on topics that are relevant and impactful to the businesses that they're serving, right? So I think all of these things are kind of good, I guess, governance hygiene for board members, whether you're a current board member or you're aspiring board member, or you're looking to, as you put it, kind of grow your career as a board member, is really understanding the nuances and also the rewarding aspects of serving the different types of structures that you've mentioned. So I think there's a lot of value. I think from a research perspective, when you're seeking board opportunities and you're wanting to understand more about a company, you know, you have the benefit from a public company of all the public information that's available about them. It's a lot harder when it's a private entity where there's not a lot of published information that you can study up on, and you really have to use your instincts and your kind of people skills to unearth things that you want to know about before you would take on a board seat. Would you agree with that?
I would. I agree with all those points. And I really feel the board member themselves or the board candidate has to really do their own due diligence. Obviously, the company is doing theirs, but what's less talked about is the board prospect, his or herself, doing that work. Obviously, as you mentioned, it's easier to read the proxy, but I'm still amazed at the number of people who don't do that. Yes, people want to get along with you and like you and respect you and all those kinds of things, but your job is one of oversight, whether you're at a private company or a public company, and also to help the company do what it's intending to do, vis-a-vis all of its stakeholders, right? Its mission, its strategy, and all of that. So you're needing to know yourself whether this is a good fit. One of the directors I interviewed for my book, Giving Voice to Values in the Boardroom, told me something I'll never forget. She said to me, when you add one person, that can change the entire dynamic of that board. Just one person. So you have to be careful as the company. Likewise, as the prospect, you also have to be careful that this is a good fit, one in which you can roll up your sleeves, work together really effectively, be supportive, but also one in which you can push back. And as I talk about in Giving Voice to Values in the Boardroom, there's a real strength in a person who can ask a question in a constructive way, bring analysis to the conversation that allows people a nice space in which to talk about, well, what if this were to happen? Or how would we disclose that information? Let's say we're going to do that. How would we disclose that information? So that book gives people a lot of information on what that contribution they make to the culture, but also how they can gently push back and help steer the company in a good, solid direction.
Yeah, and I think you've teed up nicely kind of the next area I wanted to cover today with you. So kind of thinking about nuances that impact governance effectiveness. So what are some of those nuances, such as organizational culture, leadership styles, and the composition of the boards that they're serving on, that impact the effectiveness of governance structures? And so how can executives and directors then assess and navigate these factors in driving better outcomes for the business?
I think that in terms of composition, you know, oftentimes when I'm working with executives, I really look at composition. I was working with a board that went from private to public, right? Not uncommon, but now what we're seeing is a lot of companies going from public to private. But one of the first things I look at is the composition of the board. And in this particular case, they had a lot of people that cared very much for the CEO, but the CEO also realized that despite being in a relationship-based business, he needed to have people who could, as I just said, gently push back. He felt as though he himself recognized he had too many people that just agreed with him all the time. He needed, in fact, what he called a sharper edged board so that they could make sure he wasn't going to fall on his face, right? So I think that's important. The place that that starts when you're thinking of making a pivot is who's on my board, and literally down to evaluating not only each board member. Sometimes this can come from their own self-evaluations, right? So evaluation, composition, and refreshment all work hand in hand. And sometimes the genesis of that is, let me take a look at my board. I'm going to map out all the skills, all the contributions, really get a feel for this. Because let's face it, when you're in a public environment, the proxy advisors are doing just that. But in any type of corporate structure, you have to start with that assessment of who's doing what and what do they bring to the table. And if I can formally evaluate them after that point, that's terrific, right? There's a lot of services that do that. They can also self-evaluate. And then you can, on the next tier, evaluate the board as a whole, right? So that way I can figure out where do I need to make a change. Couple that composition analysis, with where the business is going, right? Businesses are changing at such a rapid pace right now. We saw this certainly in the early days of COVID. Many of them changed their business models overnight. And the ones that couldn't, well, we don't know their names anymore, right? So when you take a look at that, you look at how fast business is moving. What we also need to do is continually have refreshment on the table, because we need to make sure our board is comprised of people who can, as Gretzky said, help us skate to where the puck is going. And so that's one thing I would really, really start with, because that composition analysis relates to the effectiveness of your governance, right? You might also, as we talked about earlier, want to address, you know, the governance structure, right? Is this governance structure the right one for me? And that's something we don't really talk about a lot, right? Those structures dictate what mechanisms control the corporation, including roles and responsibilities of the board of directors. And so that gets us right back to composition, leadership style, right? Organizational culture. Eventually, your corporate governance culture needs to match up with your corporate culture. There's a relationship there. So let me stop there and see if you have any other follow-up questions on that.
Yeah, no, I don't think I have questions, but I do have an observation, because I think one of the things that I think really allows a board member to be their full self in the boardroom is the sense and the concept of being independent in their thinking, right? And I know you talked a lot about that in some of your prior work, and I wanted to get just a thought on that, particularly when you're thinking about some of the structures within private ownership, when there may be family members that are serving multiple roles in both the board and on management teams, or when you have a board of directors that maybe have heavily involved CEOs in the selection process, where many of the board members have, you know, good working and personal relationships potentially with members of management. What are your thoughts on independence?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, because I have written a lot about this, and I've done a study of interviewing various board members. And you're absolutely right, especially in the public sphere. Despite regulations against it, we have a lot of CEO involvement in the selection process. Now, let me just say this, that as an asterisk, right, it's good and effective often if the CEO has a strong working relationship with the people on the board. And so a CEO wants to know that she can get on with a particular board member. And so an interview by the CEO is quite important. However, what we found was that the CEO very often was involved in the whole entire process from, hey, take a look at this person, which seems, you know, perfectly okay, but ending up making the final decision, right? So there's a difference between that selection whereby if I, as a CEO, say, Amy, can you take a look at this person? I think they might be really good because you happen to be the head of the non-gov committee. Well, you should take it from there, right? And there could be other candidates who you're also interviewing that come from other recommendations or come from an executive search firm or something like that. So let me just put that out there in terms of it. But independence is such a key aspect of each and every board member. And it goes back to that ability to have that gentle pushback on the CEO or on another board member. And if you have a conflict of interest, you have a much harder time doing that. Someone said to me a long time ago, this really nice quote that I also remember, the best board member is the one who does not need the money. And if you think about that, right? If you think about that, what that suggests is I'm there for the right reasons, right? We know that all board members are paid, but when you add that this person doesn't need the money, they've got that extra layer. So that's also something we don't see talked about a lot. Although, you know, there's so many examples out there now of companies that are what I have called in my book and in my research, the gray director. I know you love that term. The gray director is someone who is independent for regulatory purposes, but has conflicts, right? Either through another relationship with someone on the board, prior experience with people on the board, investments that present a conflict of interest. I've even talked about the fact that if some board members have office space at the company, they can also be compromised. So it's really tricky. You can be, again, regulatively okay, but on the ground, you're feeling compromised, right? So that's important to kind of avoid the gray director, as it is important to literally have people who are wholly independent on the board.
Right. And I think that goes hand in hand to, you know, when you think about the composition of the board, it's also when you think about tenured positions and folks that have been on the board for quite some time, you know, there's arguments pro and con against that, right? There's arguments that say, well, these individuals have significant institutional knowledge and that makes them irreplaceable. I would beg to say that probably no director is truly irreplaceable. But I would also say bringing in kind of fresh perspective to the board is something that all boards would benefit from. So, you know, I think there's a delicate balance there and there's not a one size fits all approach, certainly. But I think to your point about independence, I think being independent in your mind, in your ability to look very subjectively and carefully and critically at the decision making that's in front of you is paramount for a board member. So I think we've covered a lot of ground here today, Cynthia, but I want to finally end on how do you expand professional acumen and governance? I think for professionals that are aspiring to become highly sought after board directors, what steps can they take to further engage with and expand their expertise in corporate governance? And maybe if you can share some specific experience, educational opportunities, or networks that you recommend for building this critical acumen, that would be helpful as well.
Right. I mean, three words, network, network, network. You know, it's absolutely
which many people hate those words, but I look at it more as relationship build, relationship build, relationship build. How about that?
Yeah, I like it. I like it because really what we're doing when we're networking is we're developing relationships. And I can't really think of a single business that does not rely on relationships. So, you know, let's face it too, this exercise can be fun for some people. We meet people that like me meeting you, you know, where you can become close with this person. You know, they're more than just a business partner. They're someone you can go to for advice. There's someone who can give you the honest truth when you need it, you know, those kinds of things. So that really is invaluable for your own journey. But also, I think for the potential board member or the existing board member, it's also absolutely necessary to attend professional organization meetings and workshops. So organizations like National Association of Corporate Directors for public companies, they do some private work, the Private Directors Association, PDA, but there's also the CEO Forum and family firm events. There's even meetings for nonprofit boards, right? So those things are really important and they help you to develop relationships, but also they help you stay ahead of this constantly changing governance landscape that we've talked about today. I have to say that the Bentley program that we're offering called Private to Public Board Excellence is really specifically designed for the person who's on their first board or is really, really board ready. It's not an onboarding program. It's a program where we're going to do a deep dive into many of the things that we've talked about today, because of this changing landscape, you really need to be this person that I talked about as a generalist, right? Who can effectively manage this growing wide range of governance responsibilities, which at the same time is continually changing. So that's the kind of thing that we're offering in this program. And so it's a way to obtain knowledge about different corporate structures, different types of private boards, but also the journey from private to public board leadership, right? So we're talking about leading board members. And that's really important to do something like that. That's only going to be 3 consecutive Wednesdays starting October 29th. And we've kind of built it around a kind of longer lunchtime idea. You're going to pop into Zoom from 12 to 3. You're going to hear from me, but you're going to hear from scores of other people, BDO included. And we have some folks from Spencer Stewart coming in. We have a CEO who is talking about how they switched over from private to public, but also talking about how she hired different board members, so how she onboarded board members. And the very next time we meet, we're going to have the lead director of that same company who hired that CEO. So we're going to learn kind of in a 360 fashion. We also have segments from professionals on ethical culture. We have a CEO roundtable. We are very cognizant of the fact that private boards, oftentimes, back to your earlier question about independence, don't really know how to onboard their first independent director, and certainly in some cases don't know the value of having a board full stop. So we have a panel of CEOs who are talking about the value they have found in a board, and each of them have different board structures. One is from a PE-backed board, the other is from an advisory board, and the other is from an ESOP, an employee stock ownership plan type company. So that's another element of our program. So these are the types of things that we find are not being filled by the current marketplace. So education is really important. It'll also help you develop relationships. And lastly, I would say I find a lot of value in staying ahead of these issues through various thought leadership pieces. I know that BDO has something similar where it curates things that are going on. And those types of pieces of information are so vital. One that I also really like is the Harvard Law School Forum on Corporate Governance. I've yet to see such a wide variety of topics consistently and deeply covered. I'd also say Spencer Stewart puts out a series of pieces like this, one in which I know you're aware of is the board index. And so that's going to tell me, again, that's a public company environment, not a private company environment. But those types of pieces really help a board member put together the landscape that they need to function in and also stay ahead of the changes they also need to know to add greater value to their boards.
Well, Cynthia, thank you so much. Appreciate you sharing your thoughts today. You mentioned the new course, Private to Public Board Excellence, which we will post a link to in our show notes for our interested viewers. Thank you for the shout out to BDO's Center for Corporate Governance, which you're right, we do a lot of thought leadership across a whole variety of both traditional governance issues as well as emerging issues. And that includes episodes like this on BDO in the Boardroom, as well as webinar programs, practice aids, and events that people can get involved in. I appreciate all of the other resources you cited. I often rely on those in my own research on governance matters. So I think it's a great community, and all of the other organizations you mentioned earlier, I find a true benefit in learning from fellow either aspiring directors or seated directors that really are willing to share their experiences and help others navigate, you know, the world of corporate governance and through all the twists and turns that the business environment forces upon the board to solve, right, alongside management. So at this, I'd like to close out and thank you so much for being a guest today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. And thanks to all of our participants. And you'll find more on BDO in the Boardroom.
Thank you for listening to BDO in the Boardroom. If you like the show, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you have any questions about what we discussed today, reach out to us via BDO.com. where you can also access the resources cited in this episode and learn more about the BDO Center for Corporate Governance. The views expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of BDO.